As we begin our journey into the mansions, let me begin by giving you a brief overview of the seven mansions and what you can expect. And that's that each mansion has a character of its own. Each mansion represents an ascension ever more deeply into an altered state of consciousness within your soul that Teresa identified as the castle. Each mansion takes you more deeply on your journey into self-knowledge, and each one is going to require more and more presence of yourself to yourself. This is a journey about discovering the power of your soul in action within yourself as well as outside of yourself. The one word that ties the whole structure together, other than the word soul, would be power. You are studying, investigating, exploring the power of your soul in action. And this is a rich and exquisite journey. So much emphasis has been placed on the power of your shadow or your darkness, or how darkness has hurt you, coming through as your parents, through your childhood, or through early relationships or marriage, or however darkness has expressed itself. But I will tell you something. You're also going to discover light. You're also going to discover jewels within yourself that are hidden in your soul that you have never tapped into. A beautiful, exquisite room full of jewels that's more than metaphor. The language of the soul is a language of metaphor, because at some point, ordinary vocabulary fails you. It doesn't capture what's inside of you. And so to say that you have jewels within your soul that you have never touched may strike you as just poetry, when in fact I mean that literally. You're not accustomed to perceiving through the soul. But the way the soul identifies an interior jewel, as opposed to the way the mind thinks of a jewel, are two domains of a great distance apart. The soul would think of a jewel in terms of an untapped resource of perception. You never knew that you could hold in your interior being the power of a truth in a moment of quietness, or as Teresa would say, a moment of quietude, which is her word for it. You are suddenly absolutely imbued with this sense of oneness. And in this oneness, you become one with all of creation. Not for an hour, not for 20 minutes, but in a mystical sense of time. Suddenly what is theory for other people? I think we're all one. Yeah, we are all one. I bet we are, absolutely. How do you know? I read it and it made sense to me. But those words melt and you become one. You feel the leaves of the plants in your system and the animals breathing in your lungs and the trees moving through your very being and up your spine, and you are one with the cosmos. And in fact, you look within you and the entire galaxy is in you for one mystical second, and you are one with all, and you know every cosmic movement is a movement within you, and you get it. And the truth that, my God in heaven, every thought moves this galaxy is no longer theory. Now it lives in you. Now when we go through the mansions, as you go deeper into them, you go deeper into becoming a vessel for this kind of truth. The first mansion is about your dynamic relationship to the outside world and the inside world. The second mansion is arid for the sojourner, because the second mansion is filled with work. Work. You have to confront. I have a lot of expectations of heaven, and I don't know that I'm going to continue doing this journey unless I get something out of it. And you're going to get nothing out of it until you finally give up having to get something out of it, and then maybe the hand of the divine shows up. For the first time, a deep sense of inner self-respect that comes from respecting yourself with no rewards involved, with no carrots in front of your nose, simply because you are finally doing what needs to be done for yourself. In the third mansion, you challenge reason. You challenge the power of reason and the power reason has to keep you from finally surrendering to God. The fourth mansion, the ascension, you move into illumination. You move into the mystical heart. The fifth mansion, you ascend even further, where there is an expression into a experience of God, where there is a visitation with challenge, a visitation with cosmic expansion in terms of the management of truth. And there is anguish in this one, because how much light can you carry? This requires a pause and a building of the soul, yet another scaffolding. In the sixth mansion, this is where Teresa Strutter stuff, where she finally came forward as the exquisite scholar of the soul that she was. And she went through a very, very specific list of what is a mystical experience, what is not, how to identify a rapture, an illumination, the voices one can hear, what the soul sounds like, what the divine sounds like. I'm going to take you through these, and we're going to go into very rich moments of this. And then the seventh, which is union. I want to encourage you to the best of your ability, maintain this state of being. I did not say state of mind. I said state of being. Your journey is to become one with your soul, not your mind, your soul. And so you need to return to your soul in all of these rooms is tantamount to the richness of the journey. So you always want to return to that sense that you are on an interior journey. The object in each room is to receive from the soul, not to put things into the soul. You'll be very tempted as you go into each of the rooms to produce answers very fast. And I will tell you, the faster you produce the answer, the more you're tricking yourself. The object is to listen. The object is to let an answer come to you that may take you by surprise. If you say, you know what, I can only come up with two of these, then you have to say, boy, am I blocked. Boy, am I blocked. And you have to return to this room again and again. Most of the rooms in each of these mansions have been designed to be returned to again and again and again. No one can complete the purpose, the exercise in each room on their first visit. In fact, each room is meant to open a place in you for the rest of your life. I urge you to not enter this process with the idea of reward and expectation, but even Teresa had that challenge 400 years ago. As she emphasized with her nuns so many times, stop expecting God to reward you for doing what you're supposed to be doing. Stop expecting to be rewarded for going into your soul. This is not about rewards. It's simply about going into your soul. This is about interior work that, like prayer, like the power of prayer, is an altered state that pulls you away from your five senses, pulls you out of the authority of your five senses, and takes you away. Think about that. Like entering the castle, crossing the drawbridge, closing the drawbridge, pulls you away from the authority of your five senses and closes the rest of the world, and no one can reach you. And you're closing down the authority the five senses has to command you. Prayer, which is why Teresa was so in love with it, which is why a mystic, a Buddhist, is so in love with prayer, which is dialogue with God. Teresa didn't like repetitive prayer. You know, Hail Mary, Our Father, blah, 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 blah. Because it's a vacation. You don't have to think about what you're doing. Mantras. You don't have to be conscious of what you're saying. Real prayer is conscious dialogue. Sit and speak from your soul. And if you can't get past the point where your notion of praying is asking for something, then you better say in your heart, look at me. Unless I'm asking, I don't even know what to say to you. I have no idea how to celebrate you. What does that say to me about me? You can begin there. But now we must begin here. And I'm going to take you across the drawbridge. So I want you to settle. And when you're listening to this, as I lead you across the drawbridge with a prayer, I want you to make sure that you're not going to be disturbed. Close your eyes. Close your eyes. I want you to imagine that you're walking toward a castle. And all around you is beautiful greenery. And if you paused, you could see a valley for miles. On the right and on the left is a beautiful pine forest. And there ahead of you is your castle with the drawbridge down. And you're walking toward the castle, and you look around you, and you approach the drawbridge and you pause. And you're going to leave these wide open spaces, and that's okay. You're about to walk into the depth of your interior. Let the grace of this prayer flow into you. I cross the bridge into the silent bliss of my interior castle. I close the drawbridge and forbid all outside influences from entry into this holy place that is my soul. Here in my castle, I am alone with God, and under God's light and companionship, I discover the depth and beauty of my soul. I embrace the power of prayer. I open myself to divine guidance, and I surrender myself as a channel for grace, healing, and service as God directs my life. Here I embrace my devotion to the divine, and here in the silence of my castle, I animate my soul's dignity. I feel the sensation of my interior self calling me from within. I resonate deeply to my own divinity. I am prepared to encounter, to become, to dialogue with my own divinity, the God that is within me. Here in my castle, my faith becomes a fire, cleansing my soul of every fear. Each time I enter my castle, I trust even more deeply in the presence and wisdom of God. I surrender my mind, my heart, my need for safety, and my need for rational explanations and orderly instructions to God's will for me. I trust that all that is in my life is as it should be. I release the need to know why events happen as they do, whether painful or glorious. I release the need to let others know they have harmed me, and I ask forgiveness from all those whom I have harmed. I release my fear of being abandoned on this earth and left to face my life alone, for I am never alone. I release my fear of becoming infirm. I surrender and trust that I am on this earth with purpose. I am guided, I am cared for, and every prayer is heard, and every prayer is answered. I am a channel for grace, and I delight in the silent bliss that surrounds me in the sacred center of my castle, in the intimate presence of God. In the silence of my castle, the only voice I hear is God's. I want you to imagine that you are now in the center of your castle, in a beautiful, beautiful courtyard. And I want you to picture yourself turning around and closing the drawbridge. And in the beautiful center of the castle, I want you to deeply feel, perceive, a silence deep in your soul for the first time. Deep in your soul, go to your belly. Go deep. Go deep in your belly and feel yourself completely surrounded by the love of God. Here you are, safe. Safe. All your needs are taken care of. You truly are known by God. You are fully known. Your life deeply matters. No matter the chaos in this moment, your life deeply matters. You have entered your castle. You have entered your soul. This is your first mansion, the mansion of chaos, the mansion of humility, and the mansion of the seduction of God. Okay, then. Come on back. Now let's go to work. Let's begin with humility. What is the emphasis on humility, and why is it necessary in your castle? We have a deep misunderstanding of the beauty of humility. We can't discern the difference between humility, the power of humility, and what it is to be humiliated. For us, humiliation is the most powerful fear that there is. More than the fear of being alone, more than the fear of failure, and of all of the crimes against us that are unforgivable. At the end of the day, if you boil down what a person's action against you has been, it will come down to, they humiliated me. more than hurt, it is humiliation that you find difficult to forgive. And so as you begin your journey into the castle, the first hallway we go into in your first mansion is the hallway of humiliation, of humbleness, of exploring the authority the fear of being humiliated has had over you all of your life, and how that fear has controlled everything you've ever done, how it has stood next to you, within you, behind you, in front of you, as your voice of authority, as your false god. If you asked for guidance, your response is, but will this humiliate me? How many times I have been with people who've said, but I need to know what my highest potential is, when they really mean, do you know of anything I can do that will make me famous, popular, rich, and admired? They have no interest in their highest potential. And woven within that request is oftentimes the fragrance of vengeance, the need to get even with someone who humiliated them, so they could show them that they were right all the time about their life choices. See, I was right. See, there is a God. My kind of God, by the way. You will only go so deeply into the castle because you have an inherent fear of God, that God will humiliate you if you surrender to the divine. If you can even conceive of what surrender is, by the way. You can't live in two realities. You cannot have a mystical interior reality and then step back into illusion and continue to live in illusion. You cannot have a sense of authenticity within yourself, of divine intimacy, and then deny it if, in fact, some part of you says, that might embarrass me. One of the most profound stories for me was one in which a woman who thought of herself as a healer was jogging down the road. And she came across a woman whose dog had been hit by a car. And the woman was over her dog weeping, screaming hysterically. And the woman paused and looked at that, and she must have obviously had a thought like, is there anything I can do? What should I do? Should I go there and offer my help? And she heard a voice, and the voice said to her, go put your hands on that dog. A clear, distinct command. Not a voice, but a command. But her response was, what if it fails? What if I fail? What if I fail? I want you to think about that and think very deeply. When I talk to you about being a channel for grace, a mystical activist, a mystic in the world, this single act could have saved that dog, could have, maybe, I don't know. But what if it had been a human being hit and you heard, go put your hands on that child. At least go put your hands on the mother. The grace will flow through the mother to the child. We'll take care of the rest. And your first thought, instead of listening, was about yourself. And you don't think it takes courage? Everything depends on whether or not you can handle your fear of being humiliated. Your interactions with other people engage the authority of your soul on this earth and your fear of being humiliated, your need for approval, your need for power. If you were instructed on what's illusion in this world and what's real, and you recognize you're absolutely right, my unbelievable suffering over ambition and things that are, it's just, it's illusion. What is this? Why am I suffering over this need to be recognized? My need to accomplish this or make this money or get this or own this or whatever it is, whatever you suffer over, right? It doesn't have to be in the material world to have this person love me, whatever it is. Maybe there'll come a point where you recognize this really is an illusion. I really don't need this or that person or that love for me to be okay. I really don't. I might want it, but I don't need it. I'll be just fine. And if I'm directed to leave it, then I'll leave it. My priority is my prayer, what do you want of me? And I can't negotiate that anymore. I can't. I promised. I took the vow. It's over with. What do you want? I'll go. I'll do. I'll be. I am. I have surrendered. That's it. There's no negotiation. Why is it that you assume that the prayer of surrender will lead you only to suffering? Why is it people do that? You have no idea that it could lead you to a level of happiness and fearlessness like you have never known. But people don't assume that. The only thing you're leaving behind is your own confusion. That's the only thing at the end of the day you are actually really releasing. It just takes so long for you to untie the knots of that confusion, and you just don't trust that you won't be humiliated. So let me take you into these rooms. There are numerous rooms to the corridor on humiliation. We are but going to visit a few. Hopefully, these few will start the process rolling within you, and you can build on there, because all of you have your own history with this experience. All of you know what your own struggles with humiliation have been, and you can take it from there. You are now in the corridor of humiliation. Your eyes are closed. And I want you to imagine that this corridor looks like the corridor of an old stone castle. And that it's torch lit and you're walking down on stone floors. And that the walls are thick. And that it's familiar, you know this place, but it feels very deep. It feels very, very silent. Now on the right is a door, and it's a thick wooden door. I want you to open it up. And you hear it. Walk in. And in the room, there is a chair, kind of an easy leather chair. And there's a little table, and there's a candle. Let go, sit there. And you're on a little rug, and there's a letter waiting for you, and the letter is between you and your soul. This is a room where you and your soul are going to discuss the controlling influences through your life that humiliation has had over you, and the fear of being humiliated. And how throughout your life, the fear of being humiliated has penetrated in so many ways, influencing what you've done, what you do, the choices you make, who you love, how you've loved, whether you've forgiven, whether you pick up the phone to call someone you've longed to speak to, but you won't because of pride. How many times you would love to have said something or done something, but your response is, what will they think of me? How many times you've been instructed in your gut to do something, but you haven't? Because you thought, no, because what if I fail? What if I am humiliated? This room is thick. This is a hall of records. What you're going to discover as you sit in this room, in your soul, is that this room hurts. This is a room of authority. And on this nightstand is a very thick pad of paper. And you're going to write notes to yourself as your soul reveals to you more and more. You were supposed to do this. You could have done that. Let's discuss this. Let's clean this out once and for all. Because at the root of so much humiliation is blame. In order to live with humiliation, you've had to find people to blame. And they're in this room, too. And so you need to list how the fear of being humiliated has been an influence on you all of your life, from your hairstyle to picking out your wardrobe to determining whether or not you speak to people you've wanted to speak to or not ever spoken to them again. To your grade school years, to who you've become friends with. You have a lot of work to do in this room. A great deal of work. I would encourage you to begin going back as far as you can in your memory and ask your soul to talk to you, to reveal, to just be with you. Just be with you. And now, as we prepare to leave the room, I want you to feel as though you have closure with your soul in this moment. And I want you to feel a level of deep spiritual gratitude. I remind you that this is very profound and very difficult work. And yet, I want you to take a moment and feel how blissfully liberating this feels. Blissfully liberating. Every time you visit this room, your soul feels so grateful. Now let's walk out of that room and close the door. Here in the corridor of humility, we are walking toward a room in which the focus of work is among the most important you will ever do in the first mansion. So as you walk down, I want you to stop and look to your left, and there's a rosewood door. There's a fragrance to the door. I want you to open it up, and as you go into the room, the walls are a soft yellow, and the room's very comfortable. A candle is lit. There's a beautiful chair. There's a lovely window. The room is set for deep introspective work. And there's a letter, always the letter from the soul, with your instructions. sit in the chair and open the letter. Take a deep breath. And as you dialogue with the soul, the question that you're focusing in, and put your attention deep in your soul, is a difficult question. Being humble is not easy. It could be one of the greatest challenges of your life. We don't associate being humble with power. We associate it with poverty, with vulnerability, with being cornered. The last thing we think about being humble is that it is God's ultimate shield of protection. And so anytime we have been humiliated, we rarely see through that it could be a blissful lesson in how to be humble. In this room, dialogue with your soul about your associations with being humble, not humiliated, but humble. What do you associate it with? Why are you afraid of it? This is a room to come to when you are in situations where you know it is appropriate to be humble and you're afraid you won't be able to hold that position. Whenever you know you are about to go into a circumstance and you know you fear hubris, pride, arrogance coming up in you, and you know that is the worst part of you, you come in here and you pray. And you say, God, I need to be in great humility. Keep me humble. I need that shield. I cannot enter into this situation in arrogance, or it will destroy me and all the good that I could do in this moment on this earth. Hubris comes from fear of being raped. And my fear of being humiliated. And if you send me into this circumstance, you are sending me there. And I must go and trust. In this room, no matter when or in what circumstance, you must investigate what it is about being humble that intimidates you, so that you can build a deep, soul-filled respect for humility, trusting that humbleness is the deepest form of protection on this earth. It is your way to go in disguise. It was the disguise of Jesus, the disguise of Buddha, the disguise of Gandhi, the disguise of every great human being given a great spiritual task, was first deeply humiliated so that they could be protected by humbleness. Learn this truth. Become this truth. Fall in love with this truth. This is your room of humbleness. Now, we're going to continue. You can keep your eyes closed. Journey with me as we go into the next room. Stay in this deep, rich place. Continuing down the corridor of humbleness, as you turn to your right, there is a beautiful door. It's this beautiful white and blue pearl door. It is gorgeous. I want you to open it up. And when you walk in, you think, what an exquisite room. And the room is filled with the most beautiful objects of art and the most beautiful treasures. And you think, what is this room? And this room is you. This room is filled with all of your potential power of the soul. Jewels of sight, jewels of vision, jewels of healing, jewels of grace. They're waiting to be illuminated in you. They're just waiting, not as rewards. You're not going to get rewarded. Don't even go there. They simply melt into you. They melt through your soul like warm melted butter falls into your system as your own field of grace heats up through faith, through prayer, through trust. I want you to imagine that right there in the corner is this luscious, beautiful, down, gorgeous, comfy chair. Go sit over there. Wrap yourself in a blanket. There's a letter. Open it up. Focus all of your attention in your solar plexus deep. Go deep with your soul. And with your soul, say, talk to me. Reveal. I need 3 positive images of myself as a humble and gracious person. I need this. Fill me with who I can be. If I am blessed with empowerment, I must be humble. What am I? As a humble person, fill me with humility. I must image humbleness and mean it. I must be that. I must embody it. How can I be of service and remain in true humbleness? No matter what is asked from me, for you can send me into the heart of fame, into the heart of the public, or you can send me into obscurity. I take my hands off of that. Whatever it is, let me simply love humbleness. So in this room, no matter what jewel is given to you, whatever is melted into your soul, you visualize all of your jewels melting, your soul becoming fully empowered, and you staying humble. I assure you, this is a challenge. I want you to image empowerment. And that sometimes your pride will come up. Sometimes you'll feel that. And this is good. This is good. Go through that. And then say, ah, I see exactly where glamour might get me. Gotcha. Keep me humble. Always keep me humble. Remind me when glamour comes too close. Remind me when I feel arrogance come up. Remind me. Keep me humble as my gifts melt into my soul so that I can accept every one of the gifts that my soul has to offer. I do not want to block my empowerment for fear that I cannot handle my grace. This is the room of power, humbleness, and grace. And any time you feel, I need to pull on a new inner resource. You come into this room and you say to your soul, I need a new gift. Melt a new power into me. I need a new gift. You may feel it when you aren't feeling well. You may feel it when you need to be of service to another person, when you need to be available as a source of grace for someone. You come in here and you visualize yourself on your knees praying, please pull the grace through me. I know my soul has the stamina. I know my soul has the stamina. And keep me humble as my soul is built and scaffold toward illumination. Amen. And with that, take a deep breath and come back.